kind of cool.
The little magic light is on. We are on the air. 6 o'clock here on August 1st. Call the meeting of the Planning Commission of the City of Arroyo Grande to order. We can have a roll call, please.
Commissioner Mack?
Here.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Here.
Commissioner Shiro?
Here.
Chair Martin?
Here.
And Commissioner George is absent.
Very good. Thank you. Commissioner Mack, will you lead us in the flag salute, please?
Absolutely. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We're sitting on a paperclip.
First order of business tonight is to review the agenda. Is there anyone on the commission like to revise the order of the agenda items? I'm not hearing.
I'd like to make a motion to since they're asking for a continuance. Moving, is it 8A or 8B up first?
Okay. So what about 8A?
8A.
You want to deal with that right after community comments
already,
or before
it's
community?
First, isn't it?
Well, it's first under 8. We can do it. Do you want to do it before that or just do it?
Can we just move that now since they're.
I don't have a problem with that. Do you want to make a motion just to do that?
Sure. Yeah, just make a motion to move 8A to our next
to our
agenda.
First, our next first agenda.
Yeah.
There's a motion to move item 8A immediately next on the agenda.
That's fine.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call vote on that, please?
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
No.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. Okay, this particular item, I have to recuse myself because of it's more of a perceived or a potential conflict of interest on this, so I'm going to remove myself from the dais at this point and turn the gavel over to the Vice Chair, Commissioner Mack.
You have to change your seat, too.
Good evening. Opening it up to continue consideration of lot merger 17003 and architectural review 16009, merger of two lots and construction of a new 12,730 square foot single family home located at 779 and 759 at Castillo del Mar, which is tract 3048, Heights at Vista del Mar. The applicant is James and Katie Redman, representative is RRM Design Group. Staff.
Thank you, Commissioner Mack. This item is recommended for continuation by the applicant, and so he's requesting that the commission would entertain a continuance to a date certain, which would be September 5th.
September 5th. Any questions of staff regarding the continuation from the commissioners?
Are we going to let the general public make their comments this evening since they're here in case they can't be on the 5th, or are we just going to hold them over till the next hearing?
That would be up to the commission if they wanted to open it up to the public and take comment.
I would recommend that since we noticed them, that this was going to be the time that we should allow comment at both times. First, there could be people that are here that won't be able to make that meeting. And since we sent the notice out that it was going to be tonight, we can't, you know, we can't obviously decide anything tonight, but we can listen and let them.
That's correct. Yeah.
That's has been our policy in the past to let people speak.
Yeah.
So you want to open it up?
So just to let the community know what's going on is we've had an application or an appeal that went up to the Planning Commission on a lot merger, which was heard last month. And it was continued to this date. And in the interim, in the past few weeks, we have been receiving additional correspondence and information from staff, along with additional exhibits and track requirements. And what we have today is we have a request, based on all that new information that's coming in, from the applicant, RM Design Group, to continue the item to a date certain, which would be September 5th. So the item will be heard again publicly on September 5th, and you're all can come back and speak. We don't know if there's going to be project changes or revisions or anything like that, but is anybody in the community here to speak on that item tonight? Does anybody in the community like to speak tonight or hold their comments till September 5th? Okay, I'm going to open up to public comment.
Hello, Planning Commission. My name is Ian Johnson. I'm a longtime Royal Grande resident, homeowner 15 years, and I learned of this request for merger of lots and the planned building of a home described over 12,000 square feet in a well-planned and described neighborhood to add to our community. And I personally feel that it is not within the means and guidelines of what is intended to be part of Arroyo Grande as it is now. This is a extremely large structure. I mean, twice as large as any what would generally be considered a mansion. And it's going to be right in amongst many other set-aside homes that allow for the feel of our community and really changes what that feel will be. Not to even try and speculate as to what may be the use or intended or actual uses of such a facility, being that it's almost incomprehensible to think that something with that much space and design ideas, which are much more towards public facilities or a school or having full-size basketball courts, I believe, and other types of facilities that are way outside the parameters of what a family community of Arroyo Grande has been so far. I personally feel that it is. I'm all in favor of the American dream and build and try and make what it is that you have a dream of doing, but a lot of times place and the rest of the community certainly needs to be taken into account. And I don't feel that in a smaller planned community like this is the place to put in something that would be roughly three times the size of many of the other homes. And it's not like it's tucked away anywhere. This is a neighborhood that's going to be quite visual in the greater Arroyo Grande area, including from our beautiful PAC Center and from the high school and everything else. That huge home up on the hill is certainly not something that fits in and to be considered as a neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else from the public? Please know that we have a 3-minute timer for each speaker.
Hi, Commission. Christina Slimak from Arroyo Grande. As some of you know, I spoke at our last meeting, and I'm back kind of to reiterate some of those points, but hopefully I'll be a little shorter and quicker. You know, at the end of the day, the owner of this property can describe what their use is for these intended things, such as a basketball court or a, you know, somewhat 50 feet of outside stadium seating, an internal skybox over the basketball court. But our concern is that all of those elements of the home point to using that home for other things which are of great concern, such as, you know, public events, clinics, whatever it is. And the concern is security for our children and our neighborhood, safety, parking issues, noise issues, lighting issues at night for such a large structure. It's a commercial size structure. We're not saying that they can't build what they want to build. It's their legal right to build the house that they want to build. What we're saying is it's more appropriate to be built on 5 acres of property here in Arroyo Grande, as opposed to in a developed community neighborhood such as ours. When we originally bought property up there, and we were the first to buy up there prior to these people, we were very clearly told that it would be similar to the existing Vista Del Mar neighborhood, and more so that the houses would range between 3,000 to 5,000 square feet. You have three plans, two of which have been accepted by ARC, a third which is coming up, and they all fall within 4,000 to 5,000 square feet. So you have neighborhood compatibility established right there. So our point is you can build your home. Just build it in an appropriate area, and this is not it. Our other concern, which I think I mentioned last time, is if this is approved, we're setting a new precedent, which in our community that we value greatly. And the concern there is who's to then stop someone from coming up and buying three lots and building an even bigger house and a bigger structure. We have guidelines in place in our community and processes which we go through, such as this, so that things like that are governed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to speak on this item tonight?
Hello. I live adjacent to this new development, and I was at a meeting about a month ago. And
excuse me, what's your name?
Daryl Berg.
Thank you.
And one of the things that I heard spoken about a lot was that if it doesn't say you can't do it, it must be okay. And that's really bothered me ever since then. It kind of ignores the fact of all the meetings we've had for 2 or 3 years based on a 3,000 to 5,000 square foot homes being built. It ignores the EIR reports, the hydrology reports, when we went from 16 lots to 22. All those things were talking about, you know, a certain size home. If they wanted homes this big, they should have went from 16 lots maybe down to 10. Everything was talked about. It does, you know, just because it doesn't say you can't do that, you shouldn't assume it's okay. There's a lot of history in there that you shouldn't ignore. Another thing I'm worried about is the number of people for using a full-size basketball court. Even in the Olympics, they're going to have basketball coming up. They're going to play 3-on-3, best athletes in the world. They play half court. It takes a lot of people to use a full court basketball. It's not 4, 6, 8 kids. You know, you just can't use a space that big. People aren't physically able to. The other problem I brought up last time that seemed to come as kind of a surprise is the flooding concerns we're having up there. It's been about a month now. I hope you guys have got a chance to talk to the city about that because it's a huge problem. Hasn't been dealt with yet. We've went through 2 years of flooding. We've got 3 months from now, we'll probably get some more rain, and we're going to flood again this year. It's like the infrastructure for this neighborhood isn't figured out yet. The city's had to hire an outside engineer to try to help the developer, I guess. I don't know what's going on there. But there's a big problem. One of the comments the outside engineer said is that the basins may have to be twice as big. I personally think they need to be bigger than that. But if you start approving homes around the lots on those basins and they have to get bigger, where's that liability falling? You guys have said they can build this house. People are spending money. It's definitely the developer's fault, but I'm starting to worry as a taxpayer that somebody's going to come back to the city, which means us, and ask for money. The fact the city's paid for this engineering report tells me already that the lines of liability are getting blurred. I don't understand why the city, i.e. the taxpayers, are paying engineering to figure out what the developer did wrong. Something's getting shaky there already. So I think this is pretty scary that things are moving the way they are. I've got years worth of video and pictures on the flooding. If you guys aren't convinced of what's going on up there, but it's serious.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Mike Daly. I'm also a resident up there. I can attest to the flooding personally. The water has been directed through my backyard. There's no easements or anything like that allowing that. But I just want to add my voice to the lot merger, which I am opposed to. There's been concerns about the traffic flow around the high school. Obviously, I believe that this venue has been created for entertaining a lot of people, I would assume relatively regularly. And again, the infrastructure, not only with the development, but with the roads around the neighborhood, just really, I know that even bringing in the additional lots that were suggested that have been approved for the height, that was a big concern about how we were going to deal with the additional traffic. And I think a venue like that, this merger of these two lots, is just going to be adding to it and complicating. And I think it's just inappropriate for something like that to be in the neighborhood. Thanks.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak on this item?
Jason Blankenship, 1867, Costa del Sol, Pismo Beach. I'm here today representing the developer. I've been involved since pretty much day one of the annexation into the city of Rio Grande. Just a couple basic comments. We support the house in lot 6 and 7 and the lot merger. If you think about it simplistically, I mean, if all of them merged, you'd have, eight lots. So I think, these are 1 and 2 acre parcels. If you look at Vista Del Mar 1, I think they're half acre to maybe just over an acre. Most of them are a half, I think. So I can look at that and bring you data next time. So it's not meant to be as dense as Vista Del Mar. These were custom home lots. So I think, you guys are sophisticated enough. As far as some of the other things that were mentioned, I don't agree with them, but I'm not gonna fight that right now. So just here to support it. So
thank you. Would anyone else like to speak on this item?
My name is George Becky. I live at 612 South Via Belmonte, just one block from Castillo del Mar. I mean, one house from Castillo del Mar. So in the same area, we'd be affected by noise and construction activity, as will many of my neighbors. My wife and I are strongly opposed to this development for a number of reasons. Let me just summarize them for you. One is it'll completely change the character of our neighborhood. We live in a neighborhood of single-family homes. And Heights at Vista Del Mar is also advertised as a neighborhood of single-family homes. A single family doesn't need 12,000 square feet to live in. And so I strongly believe that there are other hidden agenda items behind their request to build a house that size. My wife and I have a home that's 3,500 square feet, and it's larger than many of our neighbors. Nevertheless, we certainly wouldn't want a house four times that large. We wouldn't know what to do with it. We'd need a whole crew of janitors to take care of our house. Our second concern is... which have completely changed the character of where we live. Finally, two more issues. One is that this structure will not look like a single-family home. At 12,000 square feet, it'll look more like a commercial structure. And therefore, also, it'll have a major effect on the appearance and therefore the desirability of the entire neighborhood. And finally, let me add the question of security. If the structure is used for sports events, for example, there will have to be major security considerations involving either private guards or security police or some or people of that sort in order to maintain the property. So it's our feeling that the proposed development is completely out of character with existing single-family homes and therefore is not appropriate for this area in Arroyo Grande. Thank you.
Anyone else like to come to the mic and speak on this item? Seeing none other, I'm going to close it to the public and bring it back to the commission. Is there any questions or concerns from the commission?
I'm sorry, I'm going to break in. Vice Chair Mack, just highly recommended to keep the public comment accepted and then continue the public hearing to the date requested. Generally it's a protocol of the commission to do that instead of start the partial hearing and then continue it. So this is my recommendation to you.
Okay, so what we'd like to do is continue the public comment at the next meeting. One of the things I'd like probably to see as well is if we can indicate at the next meeting the people that did speak in minutes for the commissioners that were not present and have that on record for the next meeting as well.
Certainly. We're happy to provide those minutes for you for the next meeting.
I'd like to make a comment. I know that in the past, when we've done the public notification and continued a hearing, we haven't sent out the notification the second time. I'd like to make a recommendation that that public notification, written public notification, go out again to the same people that were notified at this hearing at the developer's expense and not at the city's expense, since they are the ones requesting the time extension.
Correct. Staff is already prepared to do that.
Fine. I just wanted it to go on record.
So please, for the public's sake, please know that this is going to be continued to a date certain, and you're welcome to come back and come to the mic again and be involved in the process. We don't know exactly whether there's going to be any project changes or not. May come back just the way it is, but please know that, that it is going to come back and you'll have another shot at it. So with that, I want to entertain a motion.
Make a motion to continue the public hearing for September 5th.
Do we need to go through this whole process on this, or are we just...
Yes. Okay. If you can be more specific, it's continuation. Of the.
He's already started.
So continue consideration of lot merger 17-003 and architectural review 16-009, merger of two lots and construction of a new 12,730 square foot single family home, location at 779 and 759 Castillo del Mar, track 3048, the Heights at Vista del Mar. Applicant James and Katie Redmond, and I just move that we continue the public hearing for September 5th.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
A second.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
And Vice Chair Mack?
Yes. Motion passes 3-0. invite Glenn Martin to come back and join us to continue on with our community comments and suggestions. Or agenda review.
Oh. Well, the hearing room is not empty.
Thank you very much. So we transition back into our typical agenda. Next item here is item number 5. It's a community comments and suggestions. This public comment period is an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, or suggestions on matters that are not scheduled on this agenda. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. And the Brown Act restricts the Commission from taking formal action on matters not published on the agenda. The Commission requests that public comment be limited to 3 minutes and be accompanied by a voluntary submittal form if you have one. If not, that's not required. It certainly helps us facilitate meeting organization and preparation of the minutes. Is there someone in the public that would like to come and comment on an item that is not on the agenda? You're welcome. Please.
I'm John A. Weissong, and I happen to live in Grover City, Grover Beach. I'm going to be 84 here in 29 days, and I've lived here over 60 years. And when I came here, Grover City had 1,000 people. There's 2,500 here. The main part of town is over there in Housie. And Santa Maria had 7,000, and Cal Poly had 700. And I really wanted to shut the gates in because I saw in a few years there the people, I call them illegal aliens, come in here and decided that they were going to plan this area, 5 cities, and look at Santa Maria. I'm so glad I never stayed there. I come up. He knows where I've been. I've been following him, and he follows me. But I have been through the Great Depression. I've been through Korea. I've been through coming to California, and the Army discharged me. I went over to Safeway on Olympic Boulevard, got a job within less than 45 minutes, and I was sent to Santa Maria. And I found a woman there. It was hard back then because he didn't have divorces. And so we settled here in Grover Beach, right next to Mr. Miner. Perfect. But, and I've been in the cattle business for 50 years and through the drought and all that stuff. And I did it in a one-room school. I didn't go to school. But I did put 2 girls through the college, Cal Poly and Fresno State, and they both got my job. But I have 2 questions for you people. And one is, why do you have a sand pile in the center divide, left turn lane, right down here by Cesslock, Smart and Final? I have asked, and I have called. Nobody answers. Nobody knows. You know, I paid taxes in the Midwest and here, and I'm so upset because the elected people don't do anything. They can't answer. And the people that work for the government don't know what's going on. I just told y'all, I'm 84, and I know what's going on. I got a hell of a lot of common sense because I got some few acres back there in Dayton, Ohio, wheat and corn. And I can do both here and work for Safeway. I did. So I want to know why that sand pile is, because I've had to hit it 3 times because people coming out, I guess they've been at the restaurant, and they go down, I'm going west, and they're coming right towards me. I don't want to get hit on. And that's why I call this place a junkyard, because that shouldn't be there. I know.
Feel free to go ahead and continue and finish your comments.
And the second thing is this Oceana thing. I know that from way back. But 2 years ago, Grover Beach got to build a motel. And then they didn't. And so I got punished. I had to have cottage trees. They died because they couldn't water them. I hauled water from the ranch in, but I got too old to do that. I don't understand why the government doesn't do something about that, because that is so dirty and rotten down there. And I want to know why 100 million gallons goes into the ocean. That's money. That's money. Why do we do that? You guys are educated at St. Louis, all the rest of them. I'm not. I went through a one-room school, and I don't understand why we have to do that when the ground needs the water. So when I went back several times, four times, and the last time I came back was last year, but at the Mississippi River, the Ohio River, 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 people, and they have grants. And I said something to Grover Beach. Council said, how do you do that? Oh, I said, you have elected officials. Why don't you write a letter or call? But a city council member, well, how do you do that? Who do you write to? You know, I may drop dead when I go out here. But I want you people to tell me why, in a letter or whatever, that sand pile is there. And I've hit it three times to save my life, but I hit the head on. And I, Geringer, I tried to call him. He's not available. And then the water down there. Boy, we need that water. And let's get something done by getting that thing switched around. It kills me. 100 million gallons going in that ocean. And elected people, they don't know. I listen to Hill. I listen to Schultz. I listen to those people. They don't say nothing. They mumble, jumble. I'm sorry, but I would like to know, because I'm a taxpayer and I've been here over 60 years.
Mr. Wison, thank you very, very much for your comments. But in following the rules and the law, we're not allowed to comment at this, but on your questions, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that the questions will be passed on to the Public Works Director here in the city of Rio Grande. And again, no doubt in my mind that there's hope anyway that he'll be able to respond in an appropriate way. So at this point, that's the best that I can do for you. Appreciate your comments here tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else from the community that would like to speak on an item pertinent to the Planning Commission that is not on our agenda tonight? Seeing none, we'll close the community comment period. Any written communications?
The Commission should have received two memorandums from staff on item 8A and a plan set for the tract map. And those pieces of correspondence were distributed after the agenda.
Very good. Assuming that took place, if there's nothing else in written communications, you have a question or a comment?
No, just confirming that we received it.
Very good. Thank you.
We may want to confirm that Lon receives the same. She's absent today.
Very good. Excellent point. Next agenda item is the consent agenda. There are two items on here for our approval tonight. One is the approval of the minutes of the last meeting, and the second one is the consideration of a time extension for Project 17-004. Unless there is a desire to split these up, I propose that we have a motion to approve both of these items together.
I had a question on the minutes on 9A. Is it customary for staff to also include any revisions we made in the motion within the minutes?
Do you have an item number?
9A under the action. We had made a motion, but the motion also included a couple things to be added. And if I recall, it was signage.
Yes, Commissioner Mack. So in after the instruction for the city clerk to file a notice of determination and approve the conceptual, that was a word that was added, with the additional recommendation that bicycles be restricted from the trail and that distance signage be included.
Perfect. Thank you. Do we want to do both items in one motion or separate them?
I think if there's no other questions or issues, I think we can handle both on a consent agenda together.
I'll make a motion to approve both items.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second to approve the two consent items. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Shiro?
Yes.
Mr. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Fowler Payne?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. Two consent agenda items have passed. Now go to the public hearing items. Item 8A was heard previously. We'll now go to item 8B, consideration of the Development Code Amendment 17-002. This is amendments to Title 16 of the Oro Grande Municipal Code regarding rooftop decks, accessory dwelling units, and undergrounding of utilities. I had a conversation with staff earlier, and combining them into a single recommendation or a single resolution will certainly save the city some money in, you know, filing and handling this, and it's certainly a more efficient way to go. My recommendation is we kind of handle each one of these three items separately, or as three sub-items, so we can kind of focus our attention on each one of these as they come about, rather than trying to jump around. With that being the case, I'm going to turn it over to staff for the staff report on this item. Thank you.
Thank you very much, commissioners. We will run through each of these items just in the general staff presentation, and then staff is happy to go through item by item with questions about each of the different portions of the ordinance. So to begin, as you mentioned, this is development. There we go. This is Development Code Amendment 17-002, three amendments to Title 16 of the Oro Grande Municipal Code regarding rooftop decks, accessory dwelling units, and undergrounding of utilities. These have each been items that have come up over the last 3 years that staff felt appropriate to address. So to begin with is the accessory dwelling unit ordinance here in the city of Oro Grande. The previous year, in September, SB 1069 and AB 2299, which were our state laws, were passed, which went into effect January 1st, 2017, that were designed to promote the construction of accessory dwelling units in California in response to rising housing prices and in an interest in reducing parking standards, regulatory burdens, permitting and impact costs, et cetera, essentially making it easier now more than ever for a single-family homeowner to construct an accessory dwelling unit on their property. These changes are legally required that we're going to discuss, most of them at least, for local municipalities to conform with. Our AD ordinance is actually null and void currently and is voided by state law until we make these changes. So just a quick summary of the changes for the accessory dwelling unit ordinance we have. First of all, the legally required ones would be that secondary dwelling units are now to be referred to as accessory dwelling units for all further mentions of them. Setbacks is for if they're to be constructed above, for example, a detached garage in the rear of a property, setbacks on them must be reduced to 5 feet for both rear and side yards. Regardless of zoning, underlying zoning districts, anything. On-site parking may not be required when the new ADU is located within half a mile of a transit stop, located within historic districts, which we're interpreting to mean the D2.4 Historic Character Overlay District, if they are converting space, among other minor changes, and that replacement parking may be provided in a variety of configurations, including tandem parking, parking under carports, unenclosed parking, things such as that. From an optional perspective, as long as we're modifying the ADU ordinance, there is currently a requirement in the null and void ordinance to require ADUs to be occupied on a month-to-month basis. Staff recommends removal of that requirement in light of the vacation rental ordinance that passed a few years ago. Currently, single-family homes may be rented out as a vacation rental with permitting from the city, but currently if someone were to build an accessory dwelling unit, they would not be able to, which staff feels to be inconsistent, so we recommend that to be removed. And the multifamily zoned ADUs, so for example, a single-family home existing in a multifamily district, if they were to construct an accessory dwelling unit on the property, we would request or recommend that the property owner not be required to reside on site. Similar to other multi-family zone properties, for example, if you had a duplex, both of those may be rented out to two separate property owners. We think that it makes sense to consider ADUs within that context as well in multi-family zone properties. Single-family zone properties, we would maintain the owner occupancy requirement. We did receive one public comment that has been provided to the commissioner regarding ADUs being rented as short-term rentals and discussing that month-to-month requirement. And in terms of advantages and disadvantages that staff identified, bringing the Municipal Code Section 16-52150, which is the ADU ordinance, into conformance with state law will make it no longer null and void, which we believe to be important. We'll reestablish some local control over the establishment and construction of ADUs here in the city, and no disadvantages were identified. As I mentioned, I'll be happy to go through the items piece by piece, but would like to just cover them all now and then go back to them. The second option here was rooftop decks. This came up approximately 6 months ago, back in February. Staff came forward with a view shed review for a rooftop deck that was to be constructed, seeking interpretation from the Planning Commission if this was a process that they would interpret the code to require. At that time, staff was directed to re-examine how we handle rooftop decks specifically in terms of view shed reviews and how they should be processed, that we had no real design guidelines for them or standards for the development. Which is something you see in other neighboring communities, notably Grover and Pismo Beach. Both have these standards in place. So staff has been back looking at these. These guidelines are meant to replace the minor use permit view shed review process for rooftop decks built above single stories. But to clarify, rooftop decks, since they are not to be considered a story, technically may be constructed above a second story as well. We are still proposing at least that the view shed review process stay in place for those built above an existing second story due to their impacts or higher level of impacts upon neighboring views. However, above a single story, we would remove that view shed review process in terms of some design guidelines we've put together for the Planning Commission's review. So as I mentioned, above single story structures, this would include additional setbacks. 5 foot is currently what is proposed out on all yards, so a 10-foot side yard, that rooftop deck must be set back by guardrails 15 feet. To clarify, if the structure is already 15 feet away from that property line, there would be no additional setback on that. The access to the rooftop deck shall be architecturally integrated, ideally located interior if it is to be on exterior, to be concealed against the building as much as possible. To have guards or the guardrails that are legally required in the building code to count towards building height and maximum height within zoning districts, as well as furniture, other accessory items to help prevent potentially very tall structures going on top of tall roof decks. And that any lighting, if they are proposing exterior lighting, be directed towards the deck and have a lighting plan submitted to the building department so that can be reviewed. The advantages for this will be a more simple process for these rooftop decks to be constructed. They can avoid, you know, going through a potentially expensive $700 permit. They can develop the property as they see fit without going through this regulatory burden. Disadvantages would be this will remove a level of review from staff, and potential privacy impacts could occur that may have been caught in a potential view shed review situation.
If I can interrupt you just for a quick second, if you go back to that last screen image here, thank you. It says during the VSR process. Can you explain that a little bit, because there may be people in the public that don't understand what VSR stands for?
Absolutely. So VSR is referring to the minor use permit view shed review process, which is a minor permit currently. Typically just goes to staff, and it's reviewed where we look at any current second story addition. So if someone has an existing second story or wants to build a second story above their home, staff reviews that, notifies neighbors about new two-story developments, and essentially looks at these for potential negative impacts to neighboring properties. So any reference to VSR would be referring to the minor use permit view shed review process.
Thank you.
And the final portion of the ordinance we have ahead of you today is service drop undergrounding. This was brought to staff's attention by a local contractor here back in May, who requested that we look at our undergrounding requirements here in the city, that potentially these are more stringent, more onerous than other local communities, and we are potentially missing out on the opportunity for residents to develop their properties without putting a significant financial burden on them. So staff looked into this. Currently, it's 100 square feet of habitable space added to any single-family or residential property. Engineering typically would have a condition that undergrounding of utility lines to the home would be mandatory. That is waivable if the cost of undergrounding is more than 25% of the cost of the project without undergrounding. So a $10,000 addition that would be charged $10,000 to underground their utilities would be waived from this requirement. So the proposed change to this would be to change that 100 square foot addition number to 300 square feet of habitable space, shall be required to place service connections underground. The advantages of this would be the reduction of financial burden on projects that possibly if people want to improve their homes in minor ways and they're not doing so because of this potentially extremely high financial burden, we can resolve that for people. Disadvantages, that does slow the rate likely of removal of overhead utility lines. Just for comparison, this is a street here in the city here where you have the existing overhead lines with their visual impacts, and another city street with those undergrounded in a newer development, and the comparison of the aesthetic, you know, impact of overhead lines that is meant to be addressed is the intention of the undergrounding ordinance that we have. So finally, this entire ordinance was reviewed environmentally. It's exempt from CEQA for a few different reasons. Section 15282H is statutorily exempt and involving any ordinance involving essentially ADUs, and then categorically exempt per Section 15308 regarding actions by regulatory agencies for protection, maintenance, enhancement of the environment, which we consider both undergrounding and the rooftop decks to fall under. So this project was did have a public hearing notice published in the Tribune and posted at City Hall and the website. The agenda was posted, and as I mentioned before, we did have one comment received regarding the ADUs being rented out short-term. So the recommendation is that the Planning Commission adopt the resolution recommending approval of Development Code 17-002 to the City Council, and I'm happy to answer questions about any or all portions of that ordinance at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. What I'm going to propose is that we focus on each one of these individually and try to clear up issues that we may have on one before we move on to the next. I do understand the value of having this as a single resolution, and I think that we can accomplish that, but there's little doubt in my mind that we're going to have some healthy discussion on some of these items. I know we have received one request to speak on the ADU issue, but I'm going to allow my fellow commissioners to pose questions to staff and make, you know, comments before I open a public comment for the ADU portion of this proposal. Questions, comments, questions for staff on this, on the ADU section of this, please.
Go ahead.
I'll go first. On the ADUs, I have a couple questions. And obviously, one of them stems from the letter we received. Do we have any language restricting vacation rentals?
It does not directly mention vacation rentals or homestays in any way. There is a portion of our ordinance currently that is being proposed to be completely removed that states vacation rentals and homestays or ADUs shall be occupied on a month-to-month basis or longer, which typically vacation rentals or homestays would not fall under. And staff is proposing removal of that provision within our code.
Because I do think that's wise, because it would be used for the intended purpose, obviously, so we should be real clear that it's not to be used as a vacation rental. And then the second question, these things normally pop up.
Commissioner Matt, can I get you to back up? The proposal is to remove a restriction regarding the allowance of short-term rentals. And I think your comment just now, and I'm just wanting to make sure I'm clear, is that we should keep a restriction in there for short-term rentals. In other words, we should not allow them going forward in ADUs. Is that what your comment was?
Yeah, my comment was is for people coming to the area as a vacation rental should not be occupying the ADUs.
Okay. And do you want more discussion on that? There may be some discussion on that point before you move on, if you're moving on to other items, or we can stay on that topic.
Yeah, we should discuss that, because normally when people are coming up with the recreational vehicles, and you know, we're giving them a break on parking, but then there's not going to be any place for them to park. That's my train of thought. It's really intended for lower income individuals to stay and have home stay.
Sure. So I'll clarify a couple things. So the vacation rental homestay ordinance was adopted by the council a few years ago. What we've been seeing and approving through the minor use permit for specifically homestays. So homestays are owner occupied dwellings or properties where up to two rooms are rented out on a short term basis, on a transient basis. And we've had three requests come in that we've approved for homestays in ADUs, and the justification for that is the application for the minor use permit for a plot plan review to get that approval and that get that land use entitlement, and that structure ceases to be an ADU in that instance and becomes the homestay, and again it's being limited to home to ADUs structures, and I'm going to use that in quotes because at that point they cease to be ADUs. It's limited to two bedrooms or less. So if somebody came in with a three-bedroom ADU and wanted to turn that into a homestay, they would not be allowed to. And by definition of vacation rental, where the owner does not live on site, if the owner is living on site, they also cannot rent the ADU out as a vacation rental either. So I wanted to make that clarification on those two items. So the proposal to actually remove the shall be occupied on a month-to-month basis or longer is to clarify this point of confusion that comes up and actually allow the short-term rental of the ADUs and allow the property owner to rent out the ADU after getting approval for either ADU purposes or short-term rental purposes. So make that clarification.
I have a question on that. I know that there is a guideline that we go through that has primary residence, secondary residence, multifamily residential units. If we take those secondary residential units and turn them into vacation stay units, how's that going to affect our quota that we have to meet for the secondary residential units being based on a more affordable housing? Is that going to be taking away from that affordable housing? I mean, are we going to be able to qualify on our chart? And that's not included in here.
Based on the number of applications,
units that we are required to have for affordable housing.
Yeah. So, again, we've had this ordinance has been in place 3 or 4 years now. We've had three in the entire city, three ADUs be requested to be rented out. Mostly what we're seeing is rooms in somebody's primary residence being rented out, or the whole primary residence and it being a vacation rental. But bringing that up, there is a policy in our housing element that directs staff to monitor that and watch the watch any affordable unit loss and potentially make modifications in the future. So we are monitoring that at this point.
And I'll further clarify. So the state is saying to cities, remove obstacles to provide affordable housing through the use of ADUs. And they're specifically targeting certain obstacles that most cities have put into previous codes, parking and things like that. And so I just want to be clear, the objective of the state certainly is to encourage the use of ADUs for affordable housing purposes. The state also tell cities you should require a certain amount of housing, or you should provide the zoning capable the, you know, to allow that housing to be built over a number of years. That is commonly referred to our RENA number or a regional housing needs number. That number doesn't specifically count ADUs per se. In fact, ADUs aren't really counted in density calculations at all. So your question is interesting. You know, are we going to meet our RENA numbers through ADUs? Well, no, but they are an important supply of affordable housing. And so just keep that in mind. And then as regards whether or not to allow ADUs to have to be used as vacation rentals or homestays, we have rules in place that kind of hit on the concentration of those, so we don't allow two per block, for example. So that's one way we're addressing the concentration of homestays and vacation rentals, so they don't sort of overrun a neighborhood, so to speak. And the proposal is to allow ADUs to be used however the property owner wishes, for their grandparents, for a rental month to month or longer, or for a homestay purpose, and that likely would change over time. If they do apply for a homestay permit or a vacation rental permit, they have to be the only one on the block, regardless whether they use the ADU or the primary residence for that purpose.
When you say block, is that a distance? Is that an official distance, or is it? What's the
correct? It's 300 feet on the same block face.
Okay. We already have one across the street from us.
So, by example, on my street, if there are 10 houses and three or four come to the city and you know, the lots are the appropriate size to build an ADU on their lot, I could actually see three or four ADUs constructed in my neighborhood at some point in time. If all three or four of those people came to the city and say, we want to turn this block into vacation rental haven, the existing laws in the city would say only one of those ADUs, as long as within that 300-foot or, you know, in general within that block configuration, only one ADU would be allowed to be licensed as a vacation rental.
Correct. The tweak at the end of that statement was what made it correct. So it would allow one either homestay or vacation rental on that block. It could be in one of the ADUs. So yes, that your statement is correct.
So even by example, if there's a non-ADU residence on that block that gets approved as a vacation rental, you know, hypothetically, my house, I could live in there 10 months a year, rent it out as a vacation rental 2 months a year, or weekends over 2 months a year, whatever, and then none of the ADUs on my block would qualify to be successfully granted a permit as a vacation rental.
That's correct.
Very good.
But they could be rented month on a month-to-month basis.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Do you have any other?
Go ahead. In the future, when we're approving secondary residential units, is there some verbiage in that says they can't be converted to a vacation rental? Otherwise, we end up limiting our secondary residential unit for affordable housing. Or do you give them the secondary residential unit and they come back 6 months later and say, hey, I want to do vacation rental?
The second statement, it would be typically the process. Somebody would come forward. They would construct the ADU in accordance with ADU standards. Then they could apply for a homestay permit, what I'll call a homestay permit, but not a vacation rental permit, again, for the reason that the vacation rental, the owner does not live on site. And so, therefore, that would be the sequence of what would happen. Again, the ordinance in front of you is basically clarifying that the ADUs it's up to the property owner's discretion if they want to rent it out on a month-to-month basis, if they want a family member to live in there, or if they want to use it as a homestay. Then if you build a three-bedroom ADU, you can't rent it out as a homestay because it would fall outside of the definition of homestay.
Okay, any other questions of staff by the commission at this point?
A couple. Well, who polices all this?
It's a very great question, and actually companies have been created to do just that for municipalities. We're currently looking into all of the non-compliance that occurs in the city and even outside the city. It's very time-consuming in that the rental organizations don't tell you exactly where the rental is. For instance, Airbnb is a very popular rental organization. And they'll show you pictures of the home, and if we receive a complaint, we will look into it, or if we're made aware of one, we'll look into it and follow up accordingly. But we're currently working on how to go through and systematically police it citywide, whether that's existing community development staff, whether it's neighborhood services staff, whether it's a combination of the two, whether it's reaching out to one of these compliance companies and actually getting them to do the monitoring for us.
Yeah, which gets to my next point is you know, properties sell, and realtors just, they're going to sell. They're going to say, hey, two homes on one lot, and they're not going to necessarily know what all the do's and don'ts are with that. I guess what I'm getting at is there's a similar kind of thing going on in Pismo Beach, and what they do is they do a deed restriction on that unit, and then it's real clear. It pops up on the title report, and everyone knows, hey, this is how that unit is to be used. And that's my suggestion, to minimize the policing effort from staff and from city resources having to police it. And my comment.
What would happen if so your neighbor has the homestay, they've got that, and they decide they don't want to do it anymore? Then if you've deed restricted yourself, or say it's your house that you built an ADR on, mm-hmm. now there's no homestay there, and you still can't now do an ADR. You can't do it.
So, well, I guess my question would be, if they're not going to be an ADU anymore, are they going to bring it up to current requirements and make it a secondary dwelling, where they're not going to get the break on the setback, and they're going to have to provide the parking?
I'm going to interrupt here a little bit. Maybe just a clarification for staff. We're still going to be talking about secondary dwelling. Secondary dwelling as a building type goes away, doesn't exist. State law has basically preempted that as a building type, and they're requiring that the local municipalities call these secondary dwellings or comply with them using the term ADU. I'm trying to get that. So
correct. There's no two classifications.
Yeah, we're not adding a class. We're basically changing the name of a secondary dwelling unit to
additional
dwelling unit.
Accessory dwelling.
And getting some clarification and some modification
certainly
to the definition.
A good perspective. In fact, I'll take you back a little bit more than that. Really, we called them for decades granny units. Okay, granny units. It's not a guest quarter as long as it contains cooking facilities. Okay, so we had granny units, and then the state said they're called second residential dwelling units, and now the state is simply saying they're called ADUs, accessory dwelling units. And that's nomenclature, but that's what they're called now. Now, we currently have in our code, and we propose that it's still contains this, a requirement in single-family residential districts that if you have an ADU on your property, you have a deed restriction recorded to make sure that you the property owner resides on the lot. And therefore, however you're going to rent your ADU, if you're going to go apply for a homestay permit or you're going to just rent it out on a more permanent basis, you are saying you're restricting that to have the primary residence be the property owner and the ADUs as separate. We're removing this requirement for multifamily districts by virtue that they're multifamily districts and people rent out both units without living on the site.
Right.
So I hope that provides that clarification.
But then you're also removing the restriction that if it's an ADU and the owner is living in the primary residence, the secondary residence or ADU has the opportunity to be rented out under a multitude of ways, whether that's a vacation rental or a homestay or just a traditional month-to-month residential tenancy?
Month-to-month tenancy or homestay. Again, with the deed restriction for the property owner to live on site, it would not be allowed to be rented as a vacation rental.
So if I build an ADU on my at my house, and because I'm living in the primary residence and it's deed restricted by the local ordinance right now that I'm allowed to build this ADU, by that deed restriction, by definition, I can't use that ADU as a vacation rental.
Correct.
Because I'm living in that primary residence.
Correct.
And that ADU is only eligible to be rented on a month-to-month residential tenancy or as a homestay.
Correct.
Very good. There's changes, and we're all on this learning curve on the minutiae of this terminology, and I want to make it clear. I'm going to open up to public comment here shortly, but I just want to make sure that the commissioners and the staff are kind of all on the same page where this is headed.
And I will clarify, we're talking a lot about the vacation, the homestay rental of the ADUs. There's a large portion of this ordinance that is mandated by the state, so I did want to make that clarification as well. So we haven't touched on any of the other pieces, but I wanted to point that out.
And I appreciate that. From my own perspective, and I'm not speaking for my fellow commissioners sitting here today, when it's mandated by the state, we don't have a whole lot of choice and flexibility. And so when staff comes and said, the state's mandating X number of changes, in my mind, I think we kind of just nod and recognize that we have to kind of approve that in order to retain or regain some control over, managing the ADUs and how they get constructed and maintained in the city.
Absolutely.
Very good. Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the commissioners to staff before I open to public comment?
Yes, I have one. Commissioner Seiler said about the unit being only one and within 300 feet on the block or whatever, that you're talking about vacation rentals. Basically, on that one?
Both, actually.
Okay, so vacation rentals have to come before us to be approved in the first place, and they're being...
No, they do not.
Well, it goes to staff or whatever.
Correct.
And but it has to be approved.
Correct.
And those are being charged the 10, 13% or whatever it is. So they get a notification each year whether they're still operating that as a vacation rental, if would be how you would know if that vacation rental is still being utilized. If they say it isn't and it goes away, then that opens up the opportunity for somebody else within that block.
You're absolutely correct. So vacation rentals and homestays both have to obtain and maintain business licenses, mm-hmm. and they have to renew those every year. So if they fail to renew it and they don't renew it for 180 days, we consider the use to be abandoned.
Yeah, and on that form, it asks if you're still operating.
Correct.
So that answers right. That question. Is
thank you.
I had one more question. Obviously, these ADUs will come after a home that's already been built, and they're coming in for another permit. Is there any mechanism to ensure the original home is in compliance, in other words, conformance with all our building standards? Let's say a home exists and it doesn't meet the parking requirements, and now they want to do this ADU. Would you require that home to be current with our standards before they're allowed to build that ADU?
Generally, yes. Depending on situation, typically non-conforming homes, if they plan on expanding or adding additional square footage, depending on the exact nature of violation, are typically required to bring it into conformance. The big one being parking, homes with single-car garages are routinely required to place another garage space on site if they plan on expanding their home, unless they were to seek a minor exception through staff in examples for where a home is built almost perhaps along a setback line and the garage is a single-car garage with a wall next to it. There's no reasonable way to place another garage space. They can seek a minor exception in that case, but otherwise they would be required to come into conformance with development standards, yes. So in regards to parking is an interesting one with this new ADU law, and this is all legally required, so I understand the discussion that they're something we just have to sort of accept. Parking in regards to ADUs generally can't really be required anymore, the big one being a half mile within a transit stop. We actually have a map here all the way at the end, if we want to skip to it, that we had our GIS technician put together. Those are half mile radii of every transit stop here in the city. As you can see, pretty much the entire western portion of the city is completely just, we can't require parking for them. State law says no parking requirements for ADUs. Moving east of the freeway, it's a majority of the homes over there. So that's something to keep in mind as well, that there would be no new additional parking standards for these units.
But you can require the existing home to be in conformance prior to that ADU being constructed.
Correct. Right.
And that's my point, because I looked at that map, too, and I can see us having parking problems. And everyone parking on the street or whatnot. So we want to ensure that the non-conforming homes that are doing this do conform with regards to parking. And that was pretty much my comment.
Yeah, and the interesting thing, too, our city attorney caught under on page 6 of the ordinance, section 8, replacement parking. This kind of gets to your, Commissioner Mack, your point a little bit, but not directly. So if the existing home, let's say, has a single-car garage and they want to convert that into a ADU and they're within, let's say, half, they're on the western half of the city, we would not be allowed to require replacement parking of that space under the state law. Let's say they wanted to put in, let's say, an area outside of one of the half miles, if they had no parking, no garage, no parking, and they wanted to put in an ADU and it's outside of one of these five different categories, we could then, and we do, and we will, require them to construct the parking required for both units in conjunction with the ADU.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions from the commission at this point? I'm going to open
on this issue.
ADUs.
Yeah. No.
Okay. We do have someone from the public that would like to speak on ADUs. Linda Keating, you're still here, patiently waiting to get your chance.
It's me. Yes. Yes. Thank you guys for being so patient. There's been a lot of, I guess, improper information that I can clarify, but before I get going. But first is the whole business with the enforcement. I don't know what if you received a letter from me or whatever, but the city of San Francisco has recently just recently won a lawsuit against Airbnb. New York is the next one to go. Airbnb has to furnish addresses to the city of San Francisco. And if Airbnb posts a listing that hasn't been licensed by the city of San Francisco, Airbnb has to pay the city of San Francisco $1,000 a day per bad listing. So it is enforceable. And you don't need to go any special place. It will roll down. Really ugly things with these Airbnb in San Francisco have been going on. Hopefully they'll get it solved. But, excuse me. In any event, to add more confusion to this whole ADU issue is that this proposal, or whatever it is, didn't even include this thing that's called a junior ADU. And they're even smaller, but kind of fit along, but they do have their own restrictions. Well, there's a document here, I'll give it to you, that explains what these things are. So before this ordinance goes any further, before any of these recommendations go further, this needs to be included in your planning documents. So that was missed. But the thing that you guys brought up with the intent of this bill, are these bills, is that the intent is to provide low-cost housing. They were never, ever intended to be used for rentals. It's a month-to-month rental. I've been in contact with Jordan Cunningham. and Senator Monning, and I've asked for clarification and a statement from them, you know, what they thought this bill was for, because it's in all of these documents, it is clear that they should never be used for cheap hotel rooms. It just wasn't the intent. So hopefully that can be addressed. And it didn't. You guys didn't seem to go looking around to see what other people were doing. The city of San Luis Obispo has refused to let these ADUs, secondary dwellings, guest houses, be used for rentals or vacation rentals, homestays, whatever they are. And it...
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Okay. I took the time at the front to explain the business of San Francisco. I did include it in one of the correspondences, but the people are really angry about this whole Airbnb business. But in any event, SLO specifically excluded them for homestays. Recently, Aurora Grande excluded them from homestays.
You just said Aurora Grande. Is that what?
Sorry, Morro Bay.
Very good. I just want to make. Bay. I want to help you here. And
thank you, Morro Bay. And I spent most of my adult life in the city of Palo Alto, so I looked up. You know, they usually do things kind of properly, or I think they do things properly. And they just recently updated their ordinance, and they are putting in. Homestays are not allowed for the ADUs. Period. And if you go to the building department to get a building permit for a home, for an ADU unit, then you have to get a deed restriction. Like you said, the business, and it comes along that you have an ADU unit and it can only be rented on a month-to-month basis. So I just hope that you guys consider the fact that this city needs some affordable housing. I happen to be a senior citizen. I have friends. I mean, we went through at a very bad portion in our growth, whatever. The market crapped out. So what happened? I didn't even want to open my IRA mail when it came in the mail. And then, of course, the housing bubble. And then the Great Recession. So people of my age have seen a huge drop in what they thought they were going to be able to live on. And I don't know how many of you know it, but Social Security payment, you're doing good if you get $2,000 a month. And if you go, I have a friend who's been on a waiting list for 2 years for a low-income apartment, and she has to live with a friend. She rents a bedroom. It's not the way to treat your seniors. It's just not the way to do it. And if you go through this, the economics of the ADUs, and, you know, just not being able to rent them on Airbnb and providing, you know, month-to-month housing for somebody, it comes out about the same, you know, because Airbnb is advertising fees and all that other sort of nonsense, special insurance, you name it. And none of that was done when you guys proposed us. You know, what's the difference between, you know, renting your ADU unit on Airbnb or renting it monthly to somebody who really, really needs it? So, as I said, I haven't gotten as well organized as I should have been because I was away last month, and my friends were just trying to get some, as I said, I'm trying to get statements back. But these are...
If you can hand it to staff, that'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is the city of Palo Alto's ordinance, and this is everything you ever wanted to know about. It's published by the State of California. Anything else?
No, is that it? I want to make sure you exceed your 3 minutes. We've allowed you to do that, and
I think I'm done. But
very good.
Again, it's not as complex as long if you completely pull the ability to use the ADUs.
If you're going to continue to speak, I need you to speak at the dais.
If you completely pull the ability to use the ADUs as a homestay out of the equation, everything works perfectly.
Very good.
Okay?
Very good. Thank you very, very much. Are there any questions from the commissioners for this speaker? Are we ready to? Is anybody else from the public who wants to speak on this particular issue? If you don't mind introducing yourself.
Good evening, commissioners. Randy Russom, speaking as a citizen of Rio Grande and the president-elect of the Central Coast chapter of the AIA. This wasn't on my agenda. I was focused on other things this evening, and this slipped past me, but I think it's a great opportunity as long as I'm here to speak on this. On the ADUs, Central Coast chapter came forward and worked with the City of San Luis Obispo to help them give recommendations for how they might craft their ordinance. I'd like to make that offer to not only Planning Commission, but the city as a whole. We'd love to share. I wasn't prepared to make that presentation this evening, but we'd be happy to come and share that information with you. City of San Luis Obispo found a balance between what their current ordinance is, which is nonconforming to the state, and what the state handed down, and I think arrived at a great spot. So I encourage you to look at what's happened there. With regard, and as a blanket statement, we are in support of what the state has handed down, and encourage you to amend your ordinance to accommodate that. With regard to the homestay component, I think this is, or vacation rental, these are two different components of our ordinance. They are regulated separately. There are means to control both of those. In the case of vacation rental, you go through a full use permit process. And so that is fully vetted on an individual basis, and there are limits to how many in any area. So even if you open it up and every house in the town has or within the yellow area has an ADU, there are very few of those that could ever possibly become a vacation rental unit based upon the ordinance in place. This applies the same way to a homestay. Again, there's only, I think it's one per every 500 feet. So it becomes very limited, essentially one every radius of a couple of blocks. So it's that in that way, that element is already regulated. You're not turning over by adopting the new ADUs and not including any of these other ordinances and mucking it up and making it more complex than it needs to be. You're not then opening the door for a bunch of people then renting their stuff out on Airbnb. In response to some of the things that are going on with regard to that, there are people who do those things, and they are finding it that it is the key for them to be able to hold on to their homes. As the previous speaker mentioned, people's retirements were impacted in the recession. Things have definitely changed for some people, and the ability to go out and be on Airbnb and rent out a room or a guest house is often and can be the difference between keeping their home or having to do something else. So that's another consideration there. But as I said, that's sort of regulated in a whole other area. I think that's all I had to say. And again, that offer stands from the AIA. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Russom. Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to speak on this item? Seeing none at this point, we're going to close the public hearing portion of this. Any other comments concerning ADUs before we move on to the rooftop decks? Not seeing or hearing about anything, let's move on to the rooftop decks. I'm going to start on this, mostly for my own, this is my own opinion. I certainly understand the desire to move from 1 to 300 feet. I had an earlier conversation with staff concerning this, and my recommendation is we actually increase that to 500 feet. I did an 800-square-foot addition many years ago and chose to underground the utilities at my house at that time. It seems to me there are an awful lot of people, and putting in a 300-square-foot addition is not a whole lot of addition. And from my perspective, the expensive aspects of having to underground all the utilities on a 100-square-foot additions are obvious. I think that they probably would still hold true at 300, and while they may still hold true at some level at 500, that 500-square-foot threshold would end up being consistent with the school district's school impact fees, although that's a different agency and a different organization for architects and developers and even homeowners that are going through this process. And from my perspective, it would make it a little bit easier for people trying to approach this threshold if there was a single threshold for both of these. From my perspective, it makes sense. I would propose that we would change that 300 to 500, and depending on what kind of consensus we get here, but as assuming we're going to end up with a motion before this is all done, I propose that be that 300 square foot threshold be changed. And if there are any other comments or come along with that,
Chair Martin, I'd just like to clarify.
Can we get?
I bet you're clarifying the same thing I was going to clarify.
Yes, we're talking about underground changes and not rooftop decks.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just for clarification.
I jumped and got ahead of myself. I went to the third one. I need to stand corrected, and I will reserve my comments. Anything on rooftop decks? Primarily, these are single-story rooftop decks that are going to become exempt from that type of stuff.
I thought you were talking about 300
square feet of a rooftop deck. My error. I need to stand corrected. Thank you.
Okay, rooftop deck.
Rooftop decks. Let's focus on rooftop decks. That was the second item. That's what I said. Any questions or comments?
We just put the summary slide up for rooftop decks changes, and again, we'll have some process changes here. Anything on the second story would still go through the viewshed review process, but not the rooftop deck on the single story.
Single story.
Can I add a comment there? Not too long ago, we had somebody requesting a rooftop deck over off of Ruth M. Way, wherever, and got denied based on the fact there were conditions already imposed on that subdivision. So I don't know whether we need to call that out on there. Otherwise, you're not going back and looking at the original conditions of approval for the subdivision to adequately address the rooftop decks. You'd just be going through that list. The reason that one got denied was because that condition was imposed in the original subdivision. So I don't know whether you need to add another line item on there after review of the original subdivision guidelines.
Mm-hmm. We have a series of design overlays throughout the city, and some of them were placed long, long ago for various reasons, twin homes or certain height restrictions, and many of those are still in place, not all of them. Many of those are still in place, and those are automatically checked when anybody comes in for a permit. However, in many subdivisions, when they were approved, they were approved with certain conditions, and those are then incorporated into CC&Rs for that development. And many of those don't have anything to do with the city's zoning requirements. So it's going to be up to the applicant. And those CC&Rs, as you well know, change over time without coming into the city necessarily. So we'll check our zoning requirements. We'll check any existing design overlays. There may be assortment of other requirements for the tract, including decks, colors, and if you can have a yellow dog or not, all kinds of things included in CC&Rs that we don't typically check at the counter, although we're aware of some of them. That's up to the property owner to check in their due diligence period for their subdivision.
Well, having experience in that in the past, in your CC&Rs do address, they're not just property owner requirements. They address the comments that are required by the governing body. In addition, they have additional requirements that they how I did them was I did the conditions, the CCNRs, based on what the agency required. And then after that was done, then we had amended CCNRs to address the specifics that they wanted. A lot of the reason for doing that was if you came back and you wanted to change something in those CCNRs that you had imposed as the developer's conditions, you would have to go back to the governing body and get those changed. So breaking it out into the phase one and phase two. So the CCNRs do reflect what the conditions of approval are.
Yes,
so
that's a great clarification. Thank you. They incorporate the conditions of the project approval and then an assortment of other things. We will check tracked conditions when a project comes in. But again, sometimes they'll have colors and different things that aren't necessarily under the purview.
That's just additional comments. Because had that been addressed on this one that we saw, I don't know, 6 months ago or whenever it was, it wouldn't have came to us. It wouldn't have come this far because then it would have automatically been denied at that review.
Well, in all, I'd like to clarify something, if I may. The project you're referring to over on Ruth Ann Way was a viewshed review that was reviewed by the ARC. It was for actually a second-story addition of residential space, not a rooftop deck.
It incorporated a rooftop deck.
It did include a rooftop deck, correct. But the space above the existing garage was actually being converted to living space. They had a slightly enlarged rooftop deck from the second-story ADU.
That was included a secondary residential unit on that, not an expansion on the existing resident.
But it was, yes. You and I are saying the same thing, yes. And so that project's impacts were not associated to the deck itself. It was associated to the actual building and the habitable space that was being constructed and the impact that it had on its neighbor. What this, based on the direction that the Planning Commission had given in February, what this would do is basically say for rooftop decks on top of a single-story structure, so if, for instance, that Ruth Ann Way project that the ARC was looking at, rather than converting the space above the existing garage to an ADU, if they just did a rooftop deck on that, as long as they met these development standards in this ordinance and got a building permit, they could do it. So that's kind of the advantage-disadvantage portion of the rooftop deck piece of this ordinance is having that removed from the oversight of the city and just doing the building permit. As long as they still meet the height, like in the Ruth Ann Way example, they have a height requirement for total building height. As long as they meet that, we issue the building permit for the rooftop deck. So that's something for the commission to consider because that we didn't have these regulations even developed at the time that the direction was given to make these changes.
Well, I'm just saying if you are diligent in going back and looking at what was required on the original subdivision, then, you know, eliminates a lot of time and time for us and expense. Just example on the one this evening. You know, had that height limitation been addressed, we wouldn't be here 3 or 4 times.
Well, not to confuse a different project with the rooftop deck piece, again, these would not come in front of you. And that we would not be issuing viewshed reviews for them. They would not be reported to you as just an advisory note. We would simply be issuing building permits, unless it's on top of a second story, in which case then we would do the viewshed review. So the way that the regulations are set up, if the Planning Commission and ultimately council are in agreement with them, then we would lose that further piece of oversight.
Okay, thank you. Question or comment?
I just want to say it's coming along nicely because, you know, to allow a roof deck on above a single story, what's the difference if you're building a two-story and you put a deck on the end of a two-story? Well, that's not going under viewshed review.
Right.
It's totally allowed. So to only require it above the second story, well, that's technically a third story, and therefore requires the viewshed review. So I just wanted to be real clear that we are probably going to be simplifying the process and saving time, and I think it's coming along nicely.
And in reality, that's part of the intent of this portion of this resolution, is to simplify the process for people that are creating, building a deck above a single-story building.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Any more questions or comments on rooftop decks? Is it a public comment? Okay, we have one person in the audience right now, and he is not interested in
speaking. Clarification, though, was back to when you were doing the public utilities. If you built a 400 square foot rooftop deck, an average garage is, what, 425. If you decided to build a rooftop deck and it's 425 square feet, are you going to get hit with the utility improvements? Because that's a building permit.
It is a building permit, but you're not adding square footage to the residence at that point. Is that correct?
You're not adding habitable space, and that's the trigger for the underground requirement.
So you're considering a rooftop deck not habitable.
Uninhabitable.
Correct.
Or conditioned would be a better way.
Yeah. Correct. Very good. Okay, with having gone through rooftop decks, we now proceed to utility undergrounding. I'm not going to repeat all the comments that I made, other than the fact that my personal recommendation is that we increase that number from 300 to 500. And I'm opening that to the response from staff or any other questions or comments from the commission.
I have questions of staff. When you say the underground and utilities, in my mind, it is the service from the electrical panel from the home to the power pole that needs to be undergrounded. It isn't the intent or the suggestion that you're putting the power pole underground that may or may not be in the rear of your yard or the front of your yard.
Generally, yes. In this case, we're talking about the lines from the pole to the home, not the pole itself.
Okay, thank you, because sometimes it can get misconstrued as saying you have to put all those power lines with the picture that you showed, it showed a couple telephone poles, and that would really be cost prohibitive to try and put that pole underground the length of your property or to the next adjoining pole. So I'm happy to hear that.
Yes. To clarify, we're only talking about the lines in this photo. Those poles would generally still exist until no lines existed.
Okay.
And those poles are really under the control of the utility itself. The city doesn't own those poles or control it. Am I correct? I don't want to be overstating something, but
Most of the time, correct.
Most of the time,
And to Commissioner Mack's question, this proposal is only concerning service drops when building permits are being issued. However, we do require full undergrounding, including the poles, for certain projects, certain discretionary projects, subdivisions included, and conditional use permits for new construction.
Yes, of course. And so, that would be my understanding, too, right, for commercial projects or subdivisions. But for an individual coming in for permit to do an addition to their home, that's what I'm
seeing.
That's
purview of this discussion, yeah. Yes.
And then I guess the second part of that question is, do we still have a percentage of construction staying with the area increase suggestion to 300? It wasn't clear to me whether you're keeping the 25% or not.
Yes, that waiver would still be in effect. Would likely be granted less often due to the increase, but it would still, if that 500 square foot project qualified, it would still be exempt.
Thank you. That's all my questions.
Okay, great. Commissioner Schauer, do you have any questions or comments at this point?
I don't.
Okay. Not seeing any additional comments, I'm going to move that we adopt a resolution recommending the City Council adopt the proposed ordinance regarding rooftop decks, accessory dwelling units, and undergrounding of utilities with the change of square footage on the utility undergrounding from 300 to 500.
I have a question before that. We really didn't discuss the difference between 300 and 500.
Okay.
Can I just knowing that you're making that motion, could I ask?
With an absence of a second, it'll die, and we can continue to have a discussion on that. So if I'll kind of accelerate that process. Not seeing a second on that immediately, let's come back. And if you want to have some more conversation about that, that's great.
I'd like to have more conversation. Is there a difference between 300 and 500 square feet, or is there any magic that staff had come about to determine it was 300 as opposed to another number?
So there was no exact science that went into the determination of 300 square feet. We viewed it to be a reasonable increase from 100 to 300. We see a lot of 150, 200 square foot additions, bathrooms, small things like that, that we wanted to exempt while still figuring that 300 square feet would encompass a good amount of projects so that we could still move forward with the improvement of the aesthetic impact of the undergrounding. Staff has no significant issue with that number being changed to 500. Especially with the waivers granted on these smaller projects, that difference does not seem to staff to be a significant change, and we would have no issue with it.
I do have a question. What's the school fee kick in at what square footage? Is it 3?
School fee kicks in at 500.
5.
Okay.
All right. Well, I think 500 is acceptable, because if you were going to put a master bedroom and bath above your garage, you know, you're over 300 there, so, you know, given the grace period, a lot of car garages are 3-car garage, so you're still, you know, not having to
The other thing to think about, too, is you have a lot of people that try to stay under that school fee number, and then you'd have this little area there where they're at 480, and now all of a sudden they, you know, so I think it makes sense.
And I like the ability, if someone's trying to add a 2-car garage, you know, that's like 420 square feet, 20 by 20.
Yep.
I just did what you're not supposed to do. I like that ability, because you're increasing more parking without penalizing the applicant.
Yeah, I agree.
So thank you for letting me ask a few more questions.
My pleasure. Any other questions or concerning all three aspects of these before we any comments that anybody wants to make? I applaud the staff for trying to do this in an efficient manner. I recognized early on that, gee, these three things are not related, and so it can become a little bit confusing or cumbersome. It certainly was for me as I tried to clarify and simplify it, so I appreciate being able to separate it into three separate things. But one more time, I will try it at this point. I move to adopt a resolution recommending the City Council adopt the proposed ordinance regarding rooftop decks, accessory dwelling units, and the underground of utilities, with the following change of the minimum square footage required on the underground utilities from 300 square feet to 500 square feet. And I'll seek a second on that.
I'll second it.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? And if not, I'll call for a roll call vote.
My discussion was with regards to the ADUs, and Linda, I believe her name was, shared some information, some new information. I don't even know what a junior ADU is. I would like to possibly, invite the AIA's input, because they've already done a couple different municipalities, and I think that's valuable information. If there's anything that we can do to improve that, I think we should before we entertain a motion on improving that. But as far as the undergrounds, I'm with the motion on the floor for the undergrounds, and I'm with the motion for the rooftop decks.
Do you want to make an amendment of some kind to add into that? The motion, or yes, staff.
John, you're saying wait on the ADUs?
Yes, I would pull the ADU out separately for a separate motion to see if there's any more information that staff can glean from the resources that have been presented tonight.
Is there a mechanism that we can do that legally? I don't want to be
in
violation of whatever rules and regulations we are as a deliberative body or an advisory body.
You may approve the resolution and recommend it all to City Council. You can decline it, or you can amend it. And so I hear the request is to amend it and remove the ADU portion for now. I will just say that the ADU portion is the one we're a little anxious about, because we don't really have anything in place right now. That said, One opportunity would be to recommend that the City Council hear it after review of the AIA, and if there's any pertinent changes, that it come back to the Commission before moving on. Or you can simply remove that portion for now from the ordinance.
Can we approve it as is, and then we reserve the right to amend it after we hear from the AIA?
Certainly.
Not leaving you exposed.
The fact that this is a recommendation of City Council, I like the idea of amending the resolution, including ADUs, with a change or a condition that the staff meets with the local AIA group to clarify or bolster the wording in there. With those changes, are those enough changes to require that it comes back to the Planning Commission, or is this something that with these changes could just be forwarded to City Council for their deliberation rather than having to come back and meet with us, for us to have to look at that once more?
It sort of depends on what they recommend if we get it reviewed by them. I don't anticipate that the junior ADUs are going to change anything. Do you have a comment on
that? I do have a couple comments. So the information that was provided by the speaker has been reviewed by staff on multiple occasions. We've read through the memorandum from the HCD from the state, the Housing and Community Development, multiple times. Junior accessory dwelling units are optional to cities, so you can include them, you cannot. At this moment, because of the amount of changes that are required, and specifically the parking requirements, we chose to get our ordinance back to being enforceable and then follow up with any additional modifications that we wanted to make, such as the junior accessory dwelling units. My recommendation would be, and this is purely suggestive at this point, is to recommend that the council move forward with the ordinance as proposed and direct staff to meet with the AIA and see how they worked with the City of San Luis Obispo, because what we found was outside of parking, our ordinance is actually pretty consistent. And so it's kind of some of the things that we've locally decided, like the occupancy limitations and things like that, to not be able to enforce those at this time is a little difficult for staff. And even not being able to require parking on accessory dwelling units that we should be able to require parking on is a little tough at this moment in time. So that would be my recommendation, but I'll defer back to
the commission. Thank you very much.
Well, I would ask that you amend that to include that to work with the local chapter of AIA for consistencies with the five cities and in surrounding city areas that they have the knowledge of.
Make sure you're speaking so that we can all hear. I agree with that desire, but what I'm also hearing from staff is that staff recommends that we approve the resolution as it's written in order to get ADU coverage for the city. And I don't know whether that needs to be added in as a recommendation or as a separate independent recommendation, that staff work with the AIA to bolster or supplement our new, assuming City Council makes a positive, steps along this way to review that ordinance in order to make it more appropriate for our community.
And I would think that recommendation to council can come either associated with the resolution or as a separate recommendation. It's up to the Planning Commission.
Okay.
Just for clarification, what is that junior unit? Is there...
Want to see a picture?
Well, I saw the picture on there, but I wanted to know what the text was.
It's just a size.
Yes, it's essentially an incredibly small, basically studio inside an existing residence that's being used as a secondary dwelling unit.
Tiny house, huh?
Yeah, tiny house within a house.
Dollhouse.
And speaking on behalf of staff, we're more than happy to meet with the AIA to look at our ordinance and I liked how Commissioner Mack put it, to make sure we're consistent with the rest of the five cities and the county as a whole. So more than happy to do that.
You sounded like you made that. That was a motion.
It was a motion. My thought with them would be to add a second change or second recommendation, you know, the first being the 300 to 500 square foot, and the second one is to, we would adopt the resolution as it is with the recommendation that staff meet independent of this adopted ordinance in order to improve, bolster, or you know, change the ordinance as it's going to stand.
Well, that was confusing.
I don't know.
That will meet with the local chapter of the AIA.
Yeah, that's fine. meet with a local chapter of the AIA, as proposed by the speaker who came, Mr. Russin, that came and spoke and offered their services. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion?
On that item? No.
I think we're done. This is the motion to adopt the resolution. Yeah. Seeing none, may we have a roll call vote on this, please?
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
And Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Very good. Item 8B passed 4-0 here tonight. A couple more items. Any non-public hearing items? The agenda says that there are none that were included with tonight's agenda. I want to be able to confirm that.
Confirmed, yes.
Thank you. And then the next item is a notice of administrative decisions. It appears that there were three administrative decisions since our last meeting.
Can we That's comment correct. On that? On those?
Sure.
I was just wondering, when I read the final map for the 30-whatever it is, there is a height limitation imposed on lots from 3 to 10, and I just want to make sure so we don't go through this issue of exceeding the height limitation. Was that looked at on lot 3?
That was my project, and yes, the height limit is 25 feet, 100 feet from the front property line, but the residence is single story, and it's 19.5 feet tall.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure. I don't want to come back and
yeah.
do this again.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Heffernan, for returning. Any commission communications, any comments or correspondence by my fellow commissioners here tonight?
Well, I just want to reiterate that we should probably direct the question to Public Works regarding Mr. Wysong's concerns on a sand pile in front of CESLOC.
Just very briefly, without getting into a protracted discussion on, I believe that gentleman was referring to the existing medians
yes.
On Grand Avenue when he described Sandpile. So those were, of course, approved per City Council and constructed. And
I think he spoke before, didn't he, about having to go north to go south.
And then he, of course, was referring also to the our current water supply condition and the need for recycled water. We do have that underway. In fact, I believe City of Pismo Beach is approving the EIR for that project this very evening, and that's been a very big work product for the last couple of years. So that one is coming along. The EIR is beginning on that, and we'll have periodic information on our website. Right now you can see the facility study on the website concerning getting recycled water going at the Sand District.
Very good. Thank you. Any other staff communications that staff would like to share tonight?
I'll start just by noting also on our website you'll see that the Bridge Street Bridge project is still moving along. In fact, we have advertised the environmental review reports and technical studies are available for review by the public. So you can see that information on the city's website. So once that is reviewed, we'll be coming to council for approval of that environmental review document, and then we can go into design. So very exciting project, and I want to thank all the stakeholders that have been hanging in there all this time on the Bridge Street Bridge project. And the other big item is the East Grand Avenue Master Plan, and I'm going to throw that to Mr. Downing.
So I promised at the last Planning Commission meeting that I would report on the outcome of last week's City Council meeting. So the City Council voted 4-0 to approve the agreement with RRM Design Group for the East Grand Avenue Master Plan project, which does include the parking study. So we're very excited about that. And we're having a project kickoff meeting internally for that in the coming weeks, and then we'll start rolling together the whole work effort. So it's going to be a lot of work. We'll be bringing some information to you as necessary, and we'll get that done. So very excited about that.
Very good. Thank you. Anything else? I'm through the agenda. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.